fantastic Friday night if you are a White Sox fan. Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller. I should preface that, of course, it was slightly bittersweet because, of course, there's big news from last night's game regarding Munetaka Murakami. And in fact, we kind of knew this was going to be the case prior to signing off last night. But it is official. The White Sox have just made three roster moves right before the show began. So I will relay those to you before we recap last night's exciting events here at Wright Field. But prior to today's game, the White Sox have placed Munetaka Murakami on the 10-day injured list with a right hamstring. They have corresponding move for that. Selected the contract of Jacob Gonzalez from Charlotte. And the White Sox also transferred Jordan Leisure to the 60-day injured list. Now, I'll get into Jacob Gonzalez. We'll talk a lot about Munetaka Murakami today. Of course, if you'd like to join me, as always, the number to jump aboard is 312-332-3776. I wanted to note, though, White Sox, with their victory last night, three games above 500 for the first time since September 21st, 2022. As the White Sox are currently 30-27 and in second place in the American League Central. All right, but let's recap what happened here at Wright Field last night in front of a crowd of 30,000 plus. The White Sox sent their fans home happy. However, things did not start out great as Eric Fetty, who came in after as the bulk man after Brandon Eisert was excellent. Brandon Eisert, actually, by the way, worth noting, four up, four down as the opener yesterday. He was used strategically by Will Venable to counter Kevin McGonigal and Riley Green, two of the top four hitters in the Tigers lineup. At least McGonigal leads off. Green hits cleanup. At least they did yesterday. And I would say injuries that the Tigers are currently battling through, McGonigal and Green are really the two bats in the lineup that you're concerned about. So as lefties, shrewd move by Will Venable to use Eisert as an opener. And Eisert did exactly what you would have hoped he could have done. Went 1-2-3 in the first, and so he was so effective there. Will Venable sent him out for the top of the second, and he put down Riley Green, and that's when Eric Fetty came on. Eric Fetty got through the second, and then in the third inning, this is, I think, the biggest issue when you look at some of Eric Fetty's struggles. Not the fact that he gave up a home run to Dylan Dingler, but in the top of the third, Zach Short, the Tigers' nine-hitter last night, who came into the game without a home run, hitting 136 with a 321 on base, and a 503 OPS. That's right, OPS of 503. Not a slugging, but a 503 OPS. So Zach Short, Eric Fetty walks him. That's the biggest issue for Eric Fetty, is you can't have those free passes to the number nine hitter that is just really struggling at the plate right now. And that set up Dylan Dingler, the number two hitter, to come up with this.
There's a swing and a fly ball well hit out into left. Antonacci at the fence. He leaps. He can't get it. It's a two-run homer for Dylan Dingler.
Yes, so that puts the Tigers on top. And I should note, too, I talked about this in the pregame show. The Detroit Tigers are absolutely reeling. Of course, you're probably aware of Tarek Skubal on the injured list as he works his way back from those loose bodies that he had removed, or the loose body, I believe it was just singular, that he had removed from his elbow. So since then, the Tigers have been just absolutely without a plan, it feels like. They're struggling offensively. They don't have Skubal picking them up every fifth day, and they have not won a series in their last eight, and the White Sox can make it nine in a row with a victory today. But we get back to yesterday's affair. So this is where Munetaka Murakami actually ended up hearing or feeling his hamstring grab at him. Now, I'll give Murakami credit. You know, he's a slugger, But in order to break up a double play, he was hustling down the line.
A 1-0. He swings and hits a double play ball to the second baseman. McKinstry will get it to short. Relay late. Murakami able to beat that out. That ball was hit hard, 107 miles an hour. McKinstry maybe waited back a little bit, but Murakami, as you know, always runs hard.
Yeah, he does, and he's a lot quicker than people might think. But yeah, so he looks like he has a little limp now.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No, not at all.
He's very cautiously walking back to first base, and they're going to come and check on him. And he's coming out of the game. So that's not good news. Hopefully it is just a precautionary thing.
Yeah, and if you missed again, Murakami has been placed on the 10-day injured list with that right hamstring strain. I will note that it's actually huge that Murakami was able to beat out that double play, because he leaves the game. Luis Angel Acuna then pinch runs for Murakami in the bottom of the third. And with two outs, Miguel Vargas came to the plate and came through with a double to cut the lead in half.
The 1-0's hit hard and fair. Pass the bag to go to the corner and left. Acuna coming around third. Loses his helmet. He's going to score easily. So after the injury to Murakami, Vargas picks up the team with an RBI double. And it's fun to watch Acuna run. It's 2-1.
So the White Sox make it 2-1. And you're thinking, okay, you're back in this, and there's going to be plenty of opportunities. I'll tell you, Troy Melton, who was making his second start of the season, he started the season out slowly. He was on the injured list, came back. Well, Melton has been really good in his two starts against the White Sox in his career. Last night was definitely a problem for the Sox. I will point out, too, so it's 2-1 at this point in the game, and the White Sox had several opportunities, including a double by Tristan Peters in the fourth. Now, that came with two outs, so they weren't able to bring Peters home. In the fifth, Drew Rommel leads off the inning with a double, and so you're back at the top of the lineup. White Sox still can't bring him home. Chase Meidroth in the sixth doubles with one out, and the White Sox fail to bring him home. So three straight innings, the White Sox have runners in scoring position and fail to bring home the tying run, which certainly felt like they were missed opportunities at the time. But we move forward. You know the story with this team at this point. The White Sox just never stop playing. That has been something that Will Venable has talked about time and time again. And yet again, last night, with their last at-bat, the White Sox in the bottom of the ninth with Andrew Benintendi picking up a single. Tristan Peters a single. That brought Riku Nishida to the plate, and he laid down the old safety squeeze.
Finnegan to Nishida. First and third, one out. The pitch. He squares. He bunts. And it's going to be picked up by the pitcher, and the throw to first in time. Here comes Benintendi. He's going to score. And the game is tied. Great base running by Andrew Benintendi. He stopped when the throw went to first. He took off. It's 2-2.
As you heard Len describe there, accurate. Benintendi with the base running was critical in that moment because he was looked back by Will Vest on the mound. Kyle Finnegan on the mound at that point for the Tigers. And Benintendi froze. Finnegan throws out Nishida. And then Benintendi, as soon as Finnegan throws over to first, breaks for the plate, forcing Spencer Torkelson to make the throw. If he makes a good throw, Benny's probably dead at the plate. But that is why you want to be aggressive in those situations. Had Benintendi not gone home at that moment, now there's two outs and he's at third base, you're going to need either probably a base hit to bring him home. Maybe you get lucky with a wild pitch or a pass ball. But that in that moment with that opportunity, love seeing that aggression by Benintendi. Good read by him. And Spencer Torkelson in the moment could not come through. Wild throw. And Benintendi, with a nice slide away from the plate, ends up being safe and tying this ball game up. And all of a sudden, the White Sox and Tigers are headed to extras. The Tigers now played the safe game in the top of the 10th with their free man on second, the Manfred man. They sacrifice their runner at second over to third. So they give up the out so that they can have the situation, you know, runner on third with one out. And sure enough, you know, get him over and get them in.
Swung on and hit in the air to right. That'll be plenty deep enough. Nishida's back, still back, right in front of the track. He makes a catch. And here's the throw to the plate. It's a good one on a bounce, but it's way late. And they cash in the free base runner. It's 3-2. A sack fly for Zach Short on his birthday.
So the Tigers took the lead. The White Sox would strike out McGonigal after that and head to the bottom of the 10th, where Drew Romo was their ghost runner at second base, because at this point, Will Venable had pretty much exhausted his bench, because obviously Acuna had come in to pinch run for Murakami earlier in the game. He used Edgar Caro as a pinch hitter for Acuna in the eighth inning. And then when Caro reached base, Derek Hill actually pinch ran for him. So you've utilized your two catchers. So Romo had to be the runner at second base because you didn't really have a realistic option as a catcher if you remove Romo from the game at that point. And the only option on the bench was Randall Grichuk at that point anyway. So probably not the, you know, the easiest swap anyway. So you've got Romo at second base. What was interesting, and I think you could have a conversation about Sam Antonacci with Romo at second base leading off the inning, Will Venable chose not to sacrifice Romo over to third. He allowed Antonacci to hit. And I think you definitely can make the argument, hey, in that instance, are you better off maybe just laying down the bunt with Antonacci and trying to, you know, force Romo over to third and give yourself a bit of tying this one up? That was not the case. Antonacci, though, swings away, ends up striking out. So now the White Sox are, you know, runner on third, one out, and that is when Derek Hill grounds out. So at this point, it feels like the White Sox are probably in a bad spot. They're trailing by one, runner on second, so now you need at least a base hit to bring him home, and you're down to your last out. And, well, if you know this team by now, they're not giving up. And if there's anybody on this roster you know by now, it's Miguel Vargas who's not giving up.
A swing and a drive.
Come on.
Deep left. Ball game over. A two-run homer.
No way. Not again.
We're headed home.
Come on.
4-3 the final. Vargas now mopped by his teammates at home plate. What a finish.
What a finish indeed. Fantastic Friday night here at Raitt Field. White Sox win 4-3. Miguel Vargas with the walk-off bomb, his 13th of the season. You heard him getting mobbed on the field by his teammates. Shortly thereafter, he joined Brooke Fletcher. You'll hear in this cut when Miguel Vargas became the latest recipient of a Gatorade bath as he was being interviewed on the field after that dramatic walk-off home run.
You know, winning was all I got on my mind. I just want to drive the runner and, you know, be able to win this game. And, you know, hopefully I got Lucas win.
Whether it's two outs or with the game on the line, what is it about these moments that brings out the best in you?
I don't know. Just this team. This team, we saw together. We're doing this the whole year. And, you know, I'm just glad to.
Miguel, you have been telling me all season long that this team, they don't quit. Tell these fans why this year it's different with this group.
You know, having all them here in the stadium showing all love for us and, you know, see them support our team the whole year, you know, that brings all the energy for us in the clubhouse and, you know, all the fans have been amazing. And then, you know, we cannot be more glad to represent the city of Chicago.
This team indeed, Miggy. So, yeah, it was a fun night here at the ballpark. And as I mentioned at the outset, Munetaka Murakami placed on the injured list, which opens up the spot for Jacob Gonzalez, the birthday boy. He's 24 today. Happy birthday. That's a pretty good birthday gift, if I do say so myself, having the opportunity to make your big league debut. So he'll be here today for the White Sox, and we'll see if he's actually in the starting lineup. That'll be interesting. But plenty to cover, and it was a pretty great day, night here at the ballpark last night. And here's hoping it'll be a great day today. Weather looks immaculate. Game time temp, at least the forecast right now, at 110 first pitch. Looks like a very nice 69 degrees. Grab your friends and head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get one ticket and two beers starting at $24. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. When we come back, we will talk about Jacob Gonzalez getting the call and take a look at just what he accomplished down at AAA to force the White Sox hand with this call-up. This is ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play, AM, FM, HD, and app.
Three ribbies this year. The second place player in the IL has 43, and he may just have another one.
This one out to right field, and that one is Jacob Gonzalez, his 16th home run of the season.
Again, the 3-2 pitch, swing and a fly ball to right field. Back towards the track, it's back, it's gone, another one. Jacob Gonzalez, number 17 for Gonzalez.
384 for the grand slam.
To right center and deep. Does he have another one? Back of the wall, it is gone. Oh my, back to back. Montgomery and now Gonzalez. He's got two today. Fly ball center field, get out of here. Did he do it again? He did it again! Oh my! 8-4-8 with four home runs. That's number 19. Are you kidding me? RBIs 59, 60, and 61. And it's May 29th.
And he'd pick up one more RBI, too, last night. Jacob Gonzalez, a home run barrage the last 2 days. That's right, the last 2 days. The Knights played they picked up a suspended game on Thursday afternoon. They played their regularly scheduled game Thursday night, in which Jacob Gonzalez hit a couple of home runs after homering in that suspended game. And then last night, Jacob Gonzalez hits his 19th home run for the Knights, and shortly thereafter, he was sent out to the field, as Jake Santos, my producer, mentioned to me last night, and then the Knights called him back in from the field as the inning was getting ready to begin, because in response to the Munetaka Murakami news, of course, if you're just joining us, you missed it earlier, the White Sox have Murakami on the 10-day IL with the hamstring strain. So Jacob Gonzalez, planes, trains, and automobiles, my friends, get to Chicago. He was being told that he was going to the show, and he is actually en route right now as I speak to get to the ballpark. Now, apparently, I believe his plane has landed, and he's heading over to the ballpark now to make his big league debut on his 24th birthday. That is a pretty cool way to celebrate your birthday, if you ask me. On the season, Jacob Gonzalez has made some swing changes. Last year, he had some difficulties. He is the White Sox first-round pick from 2023. He was 15th overall in that draft, and it has been an up-and-down career for Jacob Gonzalez, but obviously, as you heard in those highlights, he has found something after working with Ryan Fuller in the offseason to kind of change his swing. He has been hitting a lot more line drives this year and perhaps taking advantage of a smaller ballpark in Charlotte. Now, that's something that I know has been, I don't even want to call it a criticism, but those that doubt Jacob Gonzalez as a big leaguer have pointed to the fact that of the 19 home runs that he has hit so far this season, 16 of them have come at home in Charlotte. And the difference in his home road splits are pretty glaring. I will admit that. He's got a .375 batting average with a .481 on base, and he's slugging .875 at home. So that's a .1356 OPS at home game for home games at Charlotte. And then on the road this season, he's got a slash line of .241. So that's a difference of 130 points in batting average. The on base drops about 144 points to .337 and a slug of .402 on the road. So an OPS of .739. So yes, there is a stark difference. But as I was chatting about Jacob Gonzalez a little bit in between innings last night with Darren Jackson, DJ, I'll give him credit. He said, listen, nobody else has 19 home runs in Charlotte. So you can talk about the park being, you know, a hitter's haven all you want, but you have to take advantage of your home park at the very least. So we'll see. This is Jacob Gonzalez's opportunity to prove he belongs, and he has taken advantage of it so far this season to the point where he has forced his way onto this roster. He's got some versatility. He was drafted as a shortstop, but he has moved around the diamond quite a bit, so he can play all four infield positions. I'll be curious to hear what Will Venable thinks is, you know, kind of the plan for him, how much he'll be utilized as a utility player. But that's something we'll get into in a little bit. Up next, we have a Major League Baseball draft that is 6 weeks away to the day, and the White Sox hold the number one overall pick. I know everybody is very excited. A lot of folks already have Rock Chulowski penciled in as a member of the White Sox organization, but not everybody does. In fact, Keith Law, who covers the draft very closely and has done so for, I think, over 20 years now, one of the best in the business when it comes to discussing the draft, is going to join me coming up next, and we're gonna find out if it is Rock Chulowski as the no-brainer, or is there somebody else the White Sox could be considering with the number overall pick. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Saturday, June 13th, as the White Sox take on the Dodgers at 3:10. 15,000 fans will receive a Colson Montgomery bobblehead presented by Rate. Skip the lines and secure your promo at checkout with guaranteed promo. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Real quick, before we take a quick timeout, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Keith Law of The Athletic joins me next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here at Rate Field. Perfect day out at the ballpark. If you don't have plans, come out and join us. Save all summer long with Summer Savings Selection. Enjoy $20 weekday and $25 weekend select lower-level tickets while supplies last. Exclusions apply. That includes taxes and fees. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sexton. Jeff Meller back here at Rate Field, getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Tigers here today. Fantastic walk-off winner last night, so we're going to be talking about that here in a little bit. But right now, it is my pleasure to welcome in Keith Law of The Athletic. Does a great job covering the Major League Baseball draft, the minor leagues, and just baseball in general. Always a pleasure to have Keith on the show. Keith, thanks for joining me today here on White Sox Weekly. Listen, I want to pick your brain, obviously, about the draft and what you think is going to unfold, a little bit about the minor leagues. But here at Rate Field today, it's kind of bittersweet because Munetaka Murakami was placed on the 10-day injured list after he had the hamstring strain last night, hustling down the line to break up a double play. But White Sox fans have been clamoring for Jacob Gonzalez's opportunity here at the big league level. I'm curious what your thoughts are about the 2023 first-round pick, who's had kind of an up-and-down minor league career, set to make his debut today on his 24th birthday.
Yeah, sure. This is exactly the right move. He's kind of completely changed his profile as a hitter. I mean, he is really, it comes down to he's hitting the ball way harder than he ever has before. He was never a power guy. He was never projected to be a power guy. Going back to, I mean, honestly, even heading into his draft year when he was pretty widely considered a likely top five pick, he just kind of had a mediocre spring. And I think as teams, scouts, analysts all started to bear down more on him that year, he's probably more like a mid-first rounder. That's where the White Sox took him, and then he stunk. Like, you were kind saying it was up and down. Immediately, he's out in pro ball, and I've got pro scouts texting me like, how the heck was this guy a first rounder? Hmm. And then he doesn't hit for 2.5 years. And he shows up this year, and suddenly he's hitting balls out in the 110 to 114 mile an hour range. The power is showing up at the stat line. It's a completely different player. So, you know, nothing you want to see more Pavi on the injured list, obviously. But I've been hoping for a while they would give Gonzalez a shot. He's certainly old enough. Many players from that draft class have already reached the big leagues, college and even high school guys. So I don't think there's anything else you're waiting for. And he was playing so well, hitting so well in AAA. Not like he's continuing to develop or be challenged there. Bring him up. Hopefully they give him a lot of run here. Like, play him every day. You got to move him around the infield to figure out what's the best spot. I don't really think he's a shortstop, and obviously they're committed to Colton Montgomery shortstop anyway. Move him around to a couple spots and see what fits, and then when Murakami comes back, hopefully Gonzalez hits well enough that he can be part of the lineup and part of the future, right? Everything that the White Sox are doing still should be who is part of the future here, and hopefully Gonzalez can be one. At this point, it's like found money.
No, it's a great point. Keith Law joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I'm curious, Keith, and I think you laid it out well. There really wasn't much that he could prove at AAA at this point. The White Sox kind of just didn't really have a spot for him on the infield. So I guess a couple thoughts here. One, does third base feel like the best spot for him defensively? If he's, you know, because like I think I agree with you, Colson's probably the shortstop at least for the next couple of years. You know, you can move Vargas over to first base in Murakami's absence, and then I guess the question would be, if when Murakami does return, Gonzalez say he can stick here at the big leagues, you know, what about like maybe a corner? I guess it'd have to almost be right field because Sam Antonacci is right now kind of handling left field and doing well in that spot. So just thinking long-term about Gonzalez, what would be his best defensive spot? Because you mentioned, you know, shortstop-wise, maybe he's not the best in the league there.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll point out too, Colson Montgomery has been playing way better defense at short, I think, than he has at any point since probably 2022 when he had that breakout year in the minors, before the back injury, before all the swing problems. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's clear that the White Sox they're getting guys better. It's, I hear from White Sox fans constantly. They're like, why don't we develop guys? Why don't we develop guys? I'm like, wait, right here, guys, right in front of you. They're actually, guys are getting better. You know, since Chris Getz took over, they've made a lot of personnel changes and they made a lot of philosophical changes too. And you're really starting to see some of these results on both sides of the ball, which is great to me. Antonacci's bat does not profile as a regular in left field. He might be a super utility guy. And he moves around more, and you could install Gonzalez as a regular in left. I want him on the dirt, though. He is a natural shortstop. He was never a bad shortstop. He was just, you know, we run into this problem in the draft, which obviously I spend a lot of my time in. It's like, oh, yes, he could be an average shortstop. Nobody wants an average shortstop. Everybody wants an elite shortstop. So I look at Gonzalez, it's like, look, if he has to play shortstop for you because Colson gets hurt, fine. Where is he likely to play regularly? I think third base is probably the ideal option. And what you described in terms of sort of spin the wheel and move guys around to positions where they're just honestly better suited to play, that probably makes sense. And maybe you send Acuna out. He loses his roster spot for Gonzalez to stay, assuming Gonzalez hits. And I am taking the position now. I do think he's going to hit because he's done so much at AAA. Not just performance, but the batted ball data really backs it up too.
Yeah, and Keith Law joining me here on White Sox Weekly. I think the batted ball performance is worth noting because the one thing a lot of people who are critical of Gonzalez have said is that, hey, all of his home runs, I believe it's 16 of the 19 came in Charlotte, which is, you know, a bit of a hitter's haven. But to your point, like, hey, he's hitting the ball hard.
Consistently hard. Like, I just pulled up the StatCast data because in AAA, we have access, everybody has access to that. You know, his hard hit rate, which is the percentage of balls he's put in play at 95 miles an hour or better, which is one of the first things I look at for a lot of hitters when I'm going into batted ball data. It's 44%. It's way above the median. He's peaked at 113.6 miles an hour. He's hit 10% of the balls he's hit in play so far have been at 105 or harder. This is not who he was a year ago. I think if you're looking at the home run total and you want to say he's not a 30 homer a year hitter in the big leagues, no, of course he's. I don't think anybody's arguing that he is. You would extrapolate that just from the home run total so far. That's not it. The point is, can Gonzalez hit the ball consistently hard enough to hit for a high average, to get to 15 homers a year and plenty of doubles, enough that the bat profiles at a corner position, say third base? To me, that, you know, and I would have laughed at you if you'd suggested that in January. I didn't expect at that point. Mm-hmm. And now it's, no, he absolutely looks like he is. You have to give him the opportunity to demonstrate that it's real. And I think, again, you don't want Murakami on the injured list, but there's a silver lining here. You're going to get to give Gonzalez, you know, hopefully it's 15 games to play every day and at least show enough, hopefully, that they give him further run over the course of the summer.
Keith Law, you obviously know him as the Athletics minor league expert and draft bigwig. Keith, your first mock draft had the White Sox taking Grady Emerson, who a lot of White Sox fans, you know, maybe they just buried their head in the sand quickly because they love the name Rock Chalowski so much, and they just have go ahead and penciled him into the organization already. But talk to me a little bit about, in your first mock draft, putting Grady Emerson as the number one pick and just kind of what the White Sox should be weighing here, you know, the top college bat versus a prep player who has a lot of tantalizing skills.
And to me, I mean, first of all, you know, a lot of people are, so why are you saying this for the White Sox? Because that's what I'm hearing, right? This is what people, scouts, execs with other clubs, multiple people told me leading to that draft, the White Sox are really looking at Emerson and Jacob Lombard, who's George Lombard Jr.'s younger brother, who's another high school shortstop, that they were looking more, way more at those two guys than any of the college players in this draft. And that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to take them, but they are clearly looking at a larger decision set than just Chalowski and maybe one or two of the other top college guys. I think my interpretation of this, first of all, they should just take whoever they think is the best player,
yes.
Period. Doesn't matter what I say, doesn't matter what anyone else says. They have their scouts, they have their analysts. Who they think is the best, that should be the pick. And if they think Emerson is the next Kevin McGonigal, referring to the Tigers infielder, who's, you know, was actually not even the Tigers' own first pick in that draft, but quickly became one of the best prospects in baseball, having a really solid rookie year, I think he's going to be a superstar. That to me is the closest sort of recent comparison for Emerson. Emerson doesn't have quite as much power as McGonigal does. He's a better defensive shortstop. He's a really good hitter for average and for contact. Everyone seems to think he's going to stay at shortstop. Not much of a runner. Neither is McGonigal. I don't think that's the end of the world if you show other things that tell me you can stay at shortstop. The difference between Emerson and, say, Lombard. Lombard is a better athlete, better runner, more power, not even close to the ability to hit. Like, if they take Lombard, I would actually say that's a mistake. If they take Emerson, I would say more, well, that wouldn't have been my pick, but I certainly am not going to argue with it. Emerson's the best high school player, hitter or pitcher, anywhere in this draft class. And if they see something with Chalowski, who's changed his swing a little bit this year, and his performance has just kind of plateaued rather than gotten better as he's gotten older, they see something with Chalowski that makes them back away, okay, then take the guy who you best.
So what have you seen from Rock Chalowski? Keith, you laid out a little bit there, but, you know, a lot of people, when the White Sox won the draft lottery, you know, wanted to, you know, make it a slam dunk as he was the consensus top right. prospect. And I even, listen, maybe this is just the whole, the moment we're living in here, but man, everybody loves to throw the idea of generational. Like, I don't even think a lot of people even know what the term generational means anymore because it gets thrown around every every draft class these days.
Say it every year.
Yeah, so that's not possible. Anyway, I digress.
No.
So what have you seen from Rock Chalowski this season, and would you, if you were selecting, make him your first overall pick?
So I've seen Rock three times this spring, and I had seen him in high school, too, because I rated him as a first-rounder in high school, not a first overall pick. But it was like, this is a shortstop who's definitely staying at shortstop, really vision, who looks like he's going to hit for average and will grow into some power. And that's basically what happened going into last year. And last year, he had a real standout season, and he was at the top of a really solid group of college position player prospects. He has a again, I would say he's just sort of held serve this year. We expected him to be a little bit better. Guys just tend to get better each year as they get older and stronger, more experienced. He's in the Big Ten. That's not great. This is not the SEC, not the ACC. So I kind of want, if I'm taking somebody out of the Big Ten, you better mash, because there's a lot. Big Ten has Rutgers and Maryland. This is not Tennessee and Vanderbilt and right at LSU. So, you know, he's facing a lot of mediocre pitches, even on the weekends, which is why I have argued he's way closer to the pack, like Von Lackey, the Georgia Tech catcher, so that's ACC, who is a no-doubt catcher, who can hit for average, who has power, who's a good athlete. Those guys are, it's 1A and 1B for me. I still have Rock first. He's got the longer track record. He is definitely going to stay at shortstop. He's not generational. And I go back to 2019, which was the last time we had kind of a wire-to-wire last summer to the draft, number one draft prospect, Adley Rutschman, who turned out to be a perfectly fine big leaguer, but he wasn't the best guy in the class. That was Bobby Witt Jr., who ended up going second. So even being that guy for a full 12 months leading into the draft class is far from a guarantee that you were actually the best player on the board.
Last one, Keith, as I let you go. Thanks again for your time. Always appreciate it. Keith Law of The Athletic joining me here on White Sox Weekly. All right, Keith, so one name who frequently comes up in terms of who the White Sox might be looking at with their second-round pick or maybe a little bit later is Landon Tomy, of course, because Jim Tomy works closely with Chris Getz and the White Sox organization. So I'm just curious what your scouting report on Landon Tomy, who also is a shortstop these days.
Yeah, he looks like his dad in the face. He does not have his dad's overall build yet.
Probably good for a shortstop, Keith.
You're not going to be a shortstop if you look like Pops. I'm sorry. That is just not happening. But, you know, I will also say the White Sox are one of the teams that is most likely, you know, everyone's like, oh, take the local guy, take the local guy. You know, most teams don't really do that, but the White Sox do. And I think they would argue that they have a bit of a, like a core competence in terms of knowing the local players well, and they took a kid off of Tomy's team last year, Jaden Falski. So they really know Tomy particularly well. You know, I don't think Landon's going to stick at shortstop. I do think he's going to stick at third base if he has to move off shortstop. I think he's going to come into some real power. I think it's probably more power than pure hit. I saw him last year, not this year, because I was there to see Falski. And I thought, oh, Tomy's interesting, but he's getting a little extra hype because of the last name, right? And then I hear from scouts this spring, no, he's gotten better. And he is a perfectly valid sort of second pick, whether that's in the comp round or in the second round. It would be, you know, perfectly fine. Like, that is the appropriate spot to take him. If he ends up going before the White Sox get their second selection, I wouldn't be heartbroken. I think there's a ton of high school hitters and pitchers who the White Sox could look at with that second pick, particularly if they save money on pick one, right? You know, where that would take a while to discuss, but there are ways they could make that, not take Rock Chalowski, take another player, save money, and end up with a better overall draft class. And I think that's maybe the right strategy this year, because that group of high school players who'll be available in the sandwich round and the second round is really strong. Probably the best part of this draft is that whole cluster of guys. The White Sox could do some damage if they play the board correctly.
Keith, I lied. I forgot. One more thing I want to ask you about. David Sandlin, who made his debut for the White Sox back on Wednesday against the Twins, gave up a leadoff home run to Byron Buck, went on and retired the next 18 hitters that he faced, had a phenomenal debut. But here's the question. Like, I will admit, though, some of it was some loud contact that just ended up finding some outfielders' gloves. What do you think the White Sox have in David Sandlin, who they acquired along with Jordan Hicks in what was basically a salary dump for the Boston Red Sox this previous offseason?
I will be very curious what they do with Sandlin, because the Red Sox got him in trade from the Royals and made him a cutter guy. Like, they took away multiple other pitches and were like, you are a fastball cutter guy. And I didn't like it. I saw him last year and said, what the heck happened to this guy? I thought he was a pretty good starter prospect. That's the type of thing where the White Sox, again, I think even preceding Chris Getz, they were particularly good at doing that, at working with guys just on their pitch mixes and little changes to grips. That's the whole Chris Sale story for me, is changing the slider grip and the angle of his hand and turning him from, you know, a perfectly good pitcher into, you know, Cy Young Award winner who might go to the Hall of Fame at some point. And in Sandlin's case, like, just based on that one start, it looks like they have kind of reintroduced the whole arsenal. And I think he could be a back end starter. If he's not just, it was, I'm going to, I could rant. But when I see a guy like that, it's like, no, you have multiple other pitches. Why are you just throwing? The cutter wasn't even that good. And then suddenly that's like 50% of what you're throwing. Like, why did we do this? That's not even the Red Sox, you know, front office that's there anymore. I think that change preceded these guys. But this is an opportunity for the White Sox. And at worst, you got a swing man who you can, you know, maybe just soak up some innings, which is extremely valuable at this point. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if the White Sox could make him into a viable fifth starter, which would be a great outcome for what, as you said, was basically a dump trade for the Red Sox.
Great stuff as always, Keith. Always appreciate you making us smarter. And we will be reading at The Athletic.
Yep, my pleasure.
That is, again, Keith Law, folks. Check out his stuff. As I always like to say, I think his material is worth the price for The Athletic in it by itself. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, upgrade your game day with a private suite, the perfect space to host your closest friends and family with customizable food and beverage options. For more information, visit whitesox.com/suites or call 312-674-1000. We'll be right back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
Swing and a miss, strike three on a cutter to get Buxton.
Not today.
Not today. He misses off the inside corner, and Carroll will challenge that pitch. It is barely a strike. Good challenge by Edgar. The 0-2. Called strike three. That fastball at 98. Called strike three to get Bell on a changeup. Swing and a miss. Nice comeback by Davis.
He's going around
out
nobody.
That's right.
Davis Martin with yet another exceptional outing for the White Sox, as he's been doing all season long. That was Thursday this week, as Martin picks up his eighth win of the season, which, by the way, that was on May 28th, right? That Thursday, May 28th, when Davis Martin picked up a career-high eighth win of a season. Last year, he had seven, which was his previous career high. And I'll note, you know, I thought it was a really nice breakthrough season for Davis Martin last year. He was able to make 25 starts, 26 appearances, because he had an opener in one of those. He went 142 innings, was second on the White Sox after Shane Smith in terms of innings pitched last year. And I think I felt like, you know, what was interesting were last season there were moments from Davis Martin, specifically like there was a Sunday afternoon game in August in Kansas City when the White Sox actually ended up losing this game, but Davis Martin carried a no-hitter. I believe it was into the seventh before the Royals finally picked up their first hit. And there were just numerous times last season when Davis Martin, you could see, based on his pitch sequencing and everything that he was doing, he was a step ahead of a lot of hitters. Now, it wasn't a perfect year, but I think just getting through the year last season, making a full complement of starts, and I think that was something that, for him, was something that helped him build his confidence, knowing coming into this offseason that he could get through the year, a big league season, because he had dealt with injuries in his past, had a hard time. You know, he had never made a, you know, 140 plus innings in the big leagues before. He'd never been able to get through that. And so I think that in itself was a nice stepping stone for Davis Martin. And now this year we're seeing a guy who has at the age of 29, he's got a quiet confidence inside the White Sox clubhouse. He is mature, and I just think comfortable where he's at this stage in life. And I think more than anything, that honestly is probably, you know, what has helped him have this breakthrough season this year, where he's now 8-1 with a 2.00 ERA and a sub-1 whip. Walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. 0.99 whip for Davis Martin, and he is tied for the American League lead in wins with 8. Gavin Williams also has 8 for the Guardians. But I think Davis Martin, it'd be really hard to envision a scenario where he doesn't represent the White Sox at the All-Star game in Philadelphia this season. He's off to such a start, and he's probably got, I'm looking at 3 or 4 starts max before they name the All-Star roster. So I think Davis Martin is a very, very good bet to make the All-Star team. And then the question is going to be, will he have a chance to win the American League Cy Young Award? Now, Gavin Williams, who I mentioned, is having a good year, but his ERA is at 3.07. So he's not, I don't think, the front runner by any means. If anything, Cam Schlittler is probably the AL leader right now. He's 7-2 for the Yankees. He's got a 1.50 ERA, and he's also struck out 81 hitters in 72 innings. So I think Schlittler, and let's not underestimate the fact that when you play for the Yankees, you're always going to be on the national stage. So I think Schlittler right now is probably your front runner. Spencer Arrighetti, who started the season late, has come on strong. He's 7-1 with a 1.34 ERA in just 8 starts for the Astros. So somebody who I had not even thought about up until his last 2 starts, because I just thought he missed too many starts to begin the season. I guess if Arrighetti continues mowing people down the way he has to begin his season this year, he'll have to enter the conversation at the very least. But right now, I would say Davis Martin is probably second behind Cam Schlittler when it comes to who is probably your front runners for the American League Cy Young. So, but again, I think the All-Star game is pretty much a lock for Davis Martin. I do want to talk a little bit later in the show about some potential All-Stars for the White Sox, which we're going to do. You know, how many could the White Sox land in Philadelphia at this stage? I think it's worth having a conversation about, and some players who are absolutely undeniably playing like an All-Star. Sox fans, join us for 3 can't-missed post-game concerts at Rate Field this season. Starts June 26th with Marshmello, presented by Minute Maid Spiked. Continuing on August 7th, presented by Coca-Cola. And wrapping up on September 18th with Cole Swindell, presented by Xfinity. Field passes are on sale now with limited availability. So for tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll get you the latest regarding the White Sox lineup today and all of the players who are potentially making a bid for the All-Star game. We'll also let you hear from Anthony Kay, today's starter, a little bit later in White Sox Weekly. Don't go anywhere. This is ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on YouTube.
Jeff Meller back here live at Rate Field, getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Tigers. Sox currently in the middle of a 7-game homestand right now. 3 of 4 from the Twins this week, and then walked it off last night with a Miguel Vargas bomb in the 10th to come from behind and beat the Tigers 4-3 down to their final outs. And this team just keeps on playing. Learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp starting at $165. Kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a 4-day baseball camp. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a White Sox branded compression arm sleeve, 2 tickets for 2026 White Sox home game, and more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/camps. The White Sox, prior to today's game, have placed Munetaka Murakami on the 10-day injured list with the strained right hamstring that he suffered hustling down the line to beat out a double play last night. Proved to be critical, because had he not, the White Sox may not have scored that first run, because that would have ended the inning, and thus Miguel Vargas would not have been able to pick up his first RBI of the game before he had that electric walk-off in extra innings. So obviously it was concerning when Murakami had to leave the game. He was replaced as a runner by Luis Angel Acuna, who did come around to score that first run. But Murakami has been placed on the injured list, and the corresponding roster move is that the White Sox have called up Jacob Gonzalez from AAA Charlotte. He had launched 19 home runs, including his 19th last night. He was on a binge of 4 in 2 days. It was over 3 games because they had resumed a suspended game on Thursday afternoon. But he had a couple in the originally scheduled game Thursday night, and then added one more last night before he was removed from the game early because Murakami had left the Sox. We're obviously aware that it was likely that an IL stint was going to be needed, and so they had to start making accommodations to get Jacob Gonzalez to the ballpark today. And I think we're still Brennan, you haven't seen him right down on the field yet, right? You haven't seen Jacob. No, Jacob Gonzalez, like when Clubhouse opened earlier today, had yet to arrive at the ballpark because he had to fly in from Charlotte last night and then was, or I'm sorry, I think it was this morning he hopped on a flight to get here first thing in the morning and then I believe was en route from the airport to the field here today. So he's not in the starting lineup, Jacob Gonzalez. There is a lefty on the mound for the Tigers in Framber Valdez. Gonzalez is left-handed, so I'm not sure he would have started anyway had he been able to have a little more normal routine. It's funny, I'm just thinking this, the reviews we had this week. David Sandlin had the opportunity, he got the word on Monday night and flew in Monday night, got to the ballpark on Tuesday, and he was starting on Wednesday. So he had the opportunity to take in everything at the ballpark, get his feet wet and his first day, and kind of pick the brains of White Sox pitchers as he was watching what happened, and then came out on Wednesday and just absolutely shoved after giving up a leadoff home run to Byron Buxton when he then retired 18 straight Twins batters and picked up his first big league victory in his MLB debut. So that was a pretty cool sight. So think about that. He was here ready to go, got a whole day to kind of take it in. And I suppose Jacob Gonzalez may have that opportunity afforded to him, but honestly, if he's needed with a late pinch hit at bat, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Will call upon him. But it's just funny sometimes the difference in big league debuts for players and how they actually get to take in their first major league game. So the White Sox starting lineup today, it looks like this. Chase Mydroth will lead off and play second base against the lefty. That's kind of been Will's go-to when it comes to leadoff hitter against lefties. Antonacci obviously is there against righties. But Chase Mydroth leading off today. Randall Grichuk will be in right field and batting second, which has been traditionally Murakami's spot. Miguel Vargas will play first base in Murakami's absence and bat third. Colson Montgomery plays third base today and cleans up. Edgar Caro will bat fifth and do the catching. Derek Hill is in center field. He'll bat sixth. Luis Angel Acuna plays shortstop and bats seventh. Andrew Benintendi will do the DHing and bat eighth. And then Sam Antonacci will bat ninth and play in left field today. I think this is the first time that Antonacci's actually batted ninth this season. I'll check that here momentarily. For the White Sox, they will be going up against Framber Valdez, lefty for the Astros, who was a big free agent acquisition for them in the offseason. Of course, Valdez has some very successful seasons with the Astros in his past, culminating with the 20 season when he went 17-6 with a 2.1 inning. Again, in 2024, nice year with a 2.6 innings for the Astros, top five finisher in the AL Cy Young Award, both of them. He'll be on the mound for the Tigers this year, but he's 2-3 with a 4.28 ERA. Also, remember, was when he had that incident for throwing at some Red Sox hitters after he got lit up for, I think it was a 8 or 9 spot in one of his starts. For the White Sox on the mound, it will be lefty Anthony Kay, who has been excellent over the last month. Kay on the season, 4-1 ERA in 52 innings, but he's been really good as of late. And I think the White Sox have been fortunate in some ways that he has been as good as with the Noah Schultz injury, of course, and always not being in games. Anthony Kay finding his rhythm has been nice. He's 3-0 with a 1.98 ERA over his last five starts. And that 1.98 ERA over that time period ranks sixth in the American League. Let's talk about Davis Martin from me, of course, and others, and Sean Burke. But don't underestimate, if you look at just the season stats, you may be like, Anthony Kay, he's been okay. No, Kay has been more than okay in the last month. He's been excellent. He talked earlier this week about what has been for him in his last start over, or I'm sorry, his last starts over the last month or so.
Just trying to keep things light, you know. They have a good outing, you know, they go six and why didn't you go seven? You know, just trying just to bust them around a little bit, just keep things light, keep them humble, and make sure everybody's, you know, still getting better every day and just grinding through it.
How do you chirp Sandlin after a start like that, though?
I haven't chirped him yet, but if I had to, it'd probably be that he got pulled after 61 pitches. But if that's any of us, I think we're begging to go out there and try to get the complete game. But, you know, first game, you know, it was a blowout. So, you know, we'll let this one slide. But for now, we'll let him get comfortable before we start chirping him.
He did give up a home run to his first batter, too, right? So.
Yeah, it's can't get worse than that. So he kind of settled in after that, and, you know, it was good for him.
That was Anthony Kay talking specifically about his role on the staff. He's kind of the guy who will keep it light and loose and talk some trash with some of the other members of the rotation. And you heard him joke about, you know, Sandlin, who had just a masterful six innings, and he did so in 61 pitches. And so we were joking with Kay, asking him, hey, what's the chirp for Sandlin when he, I don't know what you say to a guy who in his big league debut goes six innings and does so in 61 pitches. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. And you heard, you know, Kay say, hey, well, why couldn't you go seven, right? And that's kind of what he does, keeping it loose. We do have a longer version of that will play for you in the pregame show when it comes to what has been working so well for Anthony Kay this season, especially over the last month, as the White Sox have really had to lean on him a little bit with shorter outings from Noah Schultz and Eric Fetty taxing their pen a little bit. So it's been nice to have the vet Anthony Kay really find his rhythm here at the big league level since returning from Japan last year. One other note, too, Kay did talk about Munetaka Murakami, you know, reaching 20 home runs in June. Kay's been, at least for a lot of media members, me as well, a go-to guy when you're asking about Murakami, because he has a little bit more experience having watched him, you know, during his days in Japan. So he knew, hey, just how good of a hitter he was. And even Anthony Kay said, listen, I knew he was going to be good. I never had any doubts that he was going to be productive at the major league level. But for him to hit 20 home runs before June, joining only two other White Sox in history to be able to do that, that was Frank Thomas in 1994 and Jim Thome in 2006. For Murakami to be able to do that in his rookie season, impressed and surprised even Anthony Kay, who basically knew in spring training that Murakami was going to be a very good player. At least he was convinced that. And so for, you know, the debut for Murakami to be this good has been astounding. Of course, I'm talking about this. I should note, if you're joining us just now and you missed it earlier, the big news of the day is that Munetaka Murakami was placed on the 10-day injured list with that right hamstring strain that he suffered last night, legging out the break, you know, preventing a double play on the fielder's choice, and he had to leave the game in the bottom of the third. So he has been placed on the 10-day injured list. Last night, Will Venable obviously was a little bit vague. They were still waiting, you know, on the results of the had done. But last night, Will mentioned, you know, he said probably be a couple weeks. So obviously, you know, let's hope it's on the, you know, closer to the, you know, 10-day. But I don't think, you know, don't rule out it could be a little bit longer than that based on just Will Venable throwing out 2 weeks last night. I think that's a possibility. The corresponding move for Murakami is that the White Sox selected the contract of Jacob Gonzalez from AAA Charlotte. And Gonzalez, happy birthday to him, by the way. He turns 24 today. He's rated by Baseball America as the 23rd prospect in the White Sox organization. Think about that. And it's something that Keith Law hit on with me when we had him on at 11 o'clock today about how Jacob Gonzalez had kind of, you know, his first couple years in professional baseball were not good. He really, truly struggled. And credit to him for doing a lot of work in the offseason and really changing his swing, working with White Sox director of hitting Ryan Fuller. And now he is hitting line drives and lasers all over the place. As Keith noted, the batted ball metrics look really good. And so for anybody who wants to discredit Jacob Gonzalez and say, hey, he's got 19 home runs. Yeah, sure, but 16 of them have come at home in what is a hitter's ballpark. All I can tell you is something that DJ Darren Jackson relayed yesterday to me is, hey, nobody else has 19 home runs on the Charlotte Knights, so he's doing something right. And I think that's a fair counterpoint. And now, at some point here, if not today, in the very near future, Jacob Gonzalez will have a chance to see if he can carry that up to the big leagues. On the season, Gonzalez is hitting .317 with a .419 on base and a .668 slug. Those 19 home runs that I mentioned, which leads the International League, 62 RBIs, 33 walks, and 42 runs scored for a .1087 OPS in 52 games for Charlotte this year. He can play all over the diamonds. He was drafted as a shortstop. Keith Law said that he thinks his best position in the big leagues might be third base, but he's played plenty at second base as well, can play a little bit of first, so he gives the White Sox some versatility as well. And we've seen that now on display, you know, whether it be Sam Antonacci, his ability to play left field, move into second base. Chase Meidroth can play second, can play shortstop. Colson can play shortstop, can move to third when they need. Miguel Vargas has handled third base primarily. He's going to shift to first base today in Murakami's absence. I'm guessing we'll probably see Vargas handle first base for a good majority of Murakami's absence. But again, that versatility is critical, and the White Sox have a lot of it. And another, I think, good check in the ledger of pros for the type of team that Chris Getz has been able to put together. 312-332-3776. That is the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me on White Sox Weekly today, hanging out until 12:30, and then we'll officially begin our pregame coverage. So if you want to jump in and talk some White Sox, let's do it. And I'm just getting word from my good buddy, Bruce Levine, telling me that I guess it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks for Murakami with a grade 2 strain. So there you go. That is an important note as the White Sox, that's going to be an extended period. So they're going to have to find a way, and I guess I'll look at the silver lining here and say, hey, the Jacob Gonzalez, he is going to have a little bit of runway here, and hopefully he can take advantage of it. Again, it's nothing anybody wants, of course, because Murakami has really, you know, captured the imagination of what could be for this team. But let's be honest, you're not going to go through a baseball season without facing some adversity. And so the White Sox have done a nice job of really, you know, having a good start to the year. They've bounced back from a brutal opening road trip when they went 1-5 and had a minus 31 run differential. They've bounced all the way back. They're now in the positive. They're now 3 games above .500. They've put that in the rearview mirror, and now they're going to have a little more adversity that they're going to have to face. But you know what? The opponent on the other side of the field today, the Detroit Tigers, they'll tell you all about dealing with adversity. And they, if you look, just go and look at their injured list, right? So it's just an opportunity for someone else on the White Sox to step up, and we shall see over the next month or so to see what they can actually do. So that's the silver lining. I mean, nobody wants it. And I guess the other positive is, look, it's not great, but it's not anything that's a season ender that you can't get through. So hopefully the White Sox are going to continue to make everybody very excited. And I will tell you this, if they do get through this next extended streak of games without Murakami, all of a sudden I think they will have convinced everybody that they are truly, at the very least, wildcard contenders, if not a team that should be taken seriously to win the American League Central. Hey, Sox fans, join us Friday, June 12th, as the White Sox take on the Dodgers at 6:40. 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a Homies Big Head figure presented by Beggar's Pizza. Be sure to stay after for a post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Thanks to Bruce for that update. I missed it, so appreciate that, Brucey. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the AL Cy Young candidates with Davis Martin leading the pack. Have you seen what's going on in the National League? It's ridiculous. There are 4 studs right now in the National League that all have a viable claim for the Cy Young front runner, and it does none of those. Paul Skeens is not included in that group. We'll talk about that next, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Weekdays, 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Kids' autograph sessions are back on Family Sundays, presented by Coca-Cola, starting tomorrow. The first 125 kids to enter at Gate 5 will head to the Kids Zone mini field to receive autographs from some of their favorite players. Plus, you get to enjoy family-friendly activities. Kids get to run the bases. So much more. To learn more, visit and purchase tickets at whitesox.com/Sunday. Jeff Meller back here at Wright Field here as the White Sox and Tigers get set for their second of three. White Sox are going to have to begin a more difficult stretch without Munetaka Murakami, who was placed on the 10-day injured list with the grade 2 hamstring injury. And word is that it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks without the White Sox slugger. So big blow, no doubt about it. But in Murakami's absence, Jacob Gonzalez has the opportunity to give Sox fans, a lot of Sox fans, what they were hoping for and prove that he belongs at the big league level, because he had 19 home runs in AAA for the Charlotte Knights. He had hit 4 in his last 2 days over a 3-game stretch there. So he's going to have a little bit of runway here for the White Sox to, you know, potentially, you know, I mean, it's a like, you know, in some ways, like for like, you've got a lefty power hitter who is going to be replacing one of the best lefty power hitters in all of baseball. Now, I'm not suggesting by any means that Gonzalez is going to come in and, you know, be able to do what Murakami has done so far. But I think it's interesting that, you know, timing is, I think, a little bit fortuitous, because if you have to deal with this injury, and every team has to deal with injuries throughout the season, you just, you know, it is the reality of baseball. It's somewhat fortuitous for the White Sox that they're going to have a chance to go ahead and see what Jacob Gonzalez can do here, because he really has been crushing it. And I had Keith Law on earlier, and, you know, he made the point, this is, you know, it's good, because I'm not sure what more Jacob Gonzalez could really prove at AAA. But let's be honest, there wasn't a spot for Gonzalez in the White Sox lineup. And you don't want a young player to come up at the big leagues and not have the chance to play every day. That is one of those things where, as an organization, it's a tough balancing act, right? You might have somebody who's kind of proven enough at AAA that you're intrigued by what they might be able to do at the big league level. But if you've got, for the most part, your spots covered, you don't want them to just come up here and sit on the bench, have the one start and the occasional pinch hit. But that's, you know, that's not good for a young player's development. And so I think, you know, that's the silver lining for me, is that, you know what, it sucks to lose Munetaka Murakami for any period of time, but it gives Jacob Gonzalez a great opportunity to see what he can do here. So that's the silver lining I'm taking out of it, Sox fans. And at this point, I don't know why you would doubt this team. It's going to be, they're going to have to find different ways to win. But again, they've proven all season long that they are capable of finding different ways to win. So it should be, you know, if nothing else, it should be good theater here over the next month or so to see if the White Sox can do what they've been able to do. All right, I wanted to hit on that because I thought it was worth saying. We're going to take a quick timeout. Before we do, let's pause 10 for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVTVC HD2 Chicago. A Good Karma Brands radio station.
All right. Have you seen what Christopher Sanchez has been doing? We'll talk about it next, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Rich Eisen Show, weekdays, noon to 2, ESPN Chicago.
J. Jeff Mellor back here at Rate Field, and just got an update from the White Sox with their latest lineup as Derek Hill has been scratched due to upper body tightness. So the White Sox have a change, well, the entire lineup kind of shifting a little bit, but in Derek Hill's stead, Riku Nishita is going to enter the lineup today. And it looks like Chase Mydroth's going to still lead off, but Miguel Vargas will move to the second spot in the White Sox lineup. Colson Montgomery will hit third. Batting fourth will be Grichik. Caro will hit fifth. It looks like Andrew Benintendi will move up to the sixth spot as your DH. Luis Angel Acuna will bat seventh. Antonacci eighth. And I believe Riku Nishita will enter the lineup and hit ninth today. So obviously I'll have more details on that later in the pregame show, but I wanted to get that news to you that Derek Hill has been scratched today due to upper body tightness. Of course, the headliner for the White Sox today, after a thrilling walk-off win, some disappointing news as Munetaka Murakami has been lost for 4 to 6 weeks with a grade 2 hamstring strain. He was placed on the injured list early. Jacob Gonzalez will make his big league debut on his birthday. He's 24 years old today. Happy birthday, Jacob. And so he'll have the chance to make a big league debut, although he's not in the starting lineup today as he had to travel this morning to get here from Charlotte. So he'll be, you know, if he is in the ballpark, he just arrived, or he's, you know, en route as we speak. So he is not in the starting lineup, obviously, as you would understand. All right, so the National League, I talked about the AL Cy Young candidates and just where Davis Martin lines up amongst them. Have you seen what's going on in the National League? It is just staggering how ridiculous four pitchers look right now. And it begins with Christopher Sanchez, who currently for the Phillies has a streak of 44 and two-thirds innings scoreless. That's right. Let me repeat that. 44 and two-thirds straight innings without allowing a run for Christopher Sanchez. So he's been dominant. On the season, Sanchez is 6-2, 1.47 ERA. He has struck out 95 hitters in 79 and a third innings. And so that obviously catches your eye. Meanwhile, the Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, just the other day in his fifth start in the month of May, finally gave up a run in the month of May. Mizorowski has a 1.83 ERA on the season. He's 5-2. He has struck out 100 hitters in 64 innings, folks. Yeah, that's what happens when you can throw, when you can crack 103 on the radar and you can just pump in, you know, triple-digit fastballs 50-plus times in your start. That's something that Mizorowski has accomplished this year. Yeah, he's tough to hit. He strikes out 14.1 hitters per nine this year, and he's got a 0.83 whip. So Mizorowski and Sanchez, you'd think, okay, they're in a class by themselves, right? Well, slow down, not so fast, because Chase Burns, the rookie for the Reds, he's quietly putting together a dominant run here as well. In his 11 starts so far this year, Chase Burns is 7-1 with a 1.96 ERA in 64 innings of work, and he's got 72 strikeouts with a 0.96 whip. And then, how about our old friend Chris Sale, who, and I'm not, I don't want to throw shade at Keith Law because I think he's one of my favorite baseball analysts. He mentioned, you know, potential Hall of Fame. I think Chris Sale, based on what he's done so far, I keep looking at the numbers, and I think if you look at the shifting landscape when it comes to starting pitchers, Chris Sale, to me, I think is already a Hall of Famer, folks. He won he finally got that Cy Young that he had always been close to but never actually been able to win. He finally won one with the Braves a couple of years ago, and again, he's been excellent this year. Chris Sale, 8-3 with a 2.01 ERA. He has 80 strikeouts in 67 innings of work for the Braves, and he's got a 0.94 whip. So I just gave you four pitchers in the National League who I think in any other year would be a clear front runner, but they've been so dominant we've got a real conversation. And maybe, you know, maybe it's not just the idea that, hey, we've got four players in particular who are just blowing away the opposition, but maybe there's something to, the new ABS system and pitchers, certain pitchers in particular who might be, able to, utilize what they're able to do. You know, walks are up around Major League Baseball, and maybe to just have that pin and control, maybe those guys are the ones who are truly kind of taking advantage of ABS because they can still put the ball where they want it and avoid the walks. And yet, maybe there's something worth, kind of doing a deeper dive on. So I'll have to kind of take a look at that. But maybe that's part of the reason why we're seeing such dominant stretches by pitchers who have some of the best command in all of baseball in guys like Christopher Sanchez and Chris Sale and, Chase Burns. I don't think Mizorowski has the command as the others, but he's just got an electric arm that is undeniable. And all that, and I didn't even mention Paul Skeens, who is, I think, a distant fifth. Oh, and you know what? Look at this. I gave you players. Didn't do this intentionally. I didn't even note Shohei Ohtani. I feel like we've had three different White Sox Twitter poll questions this season asking, is Shohei Ohtani going to win the Cy Young? And part of the reason I omitted him is because technically right now Shohei Ohtani does not have enough innings to qualify for the ERA title. I believe that's, Ohtani has 55 innings pitched right now, and the Dodgers have played 57 games. You need one inning for every game that your team plays to qualify for the ERA title. So at the end of the season, Shohei Ohtani has to throw 162 innings to qualify for the ERA title. He would be leading the ERA title by leaps and bounds because he has a .82 ERA. Shohei Ohtani has 8 quality starts in his 9 starts. He has struck out 61 hitters in his 55 innings of work. By the way, if you missed it, his last start, he threw 6 no-hit innings and also with a home run. So anyway, I gave you 4 ridiculous starting pitchers in the National League, and I didn't even give you Shohei Ohtani because he technically doesn't qualify for the ERA title right now. He's 2 innings shy of doing that. So that's going to be interesting. And is that maybe going to be the difference for voters when it comes to, hey, are they going to vote for Ohtani? Does he have to get? I think the Dodgers, if it's that close at the end of the year, I think they'll look for a way to try and make sure, ensure that he gets to 162 just so that he can qualify for the ERA title. It's one of those little things where I don't know if it would totally be the difference, but if it's going to be a race that's this close and Shohei Ohtani, people around him have talked about how he kind of has set his sights on trying to win the Cy Young this year because he's basically done everything else that's possible in baseball. So thinking it through, I wouldn't be surprised if you get close. The last thing the Dodgers are going to want is for him to finish like with 160 innings and fail to qualify for the ERA title because he missed it by 2 innings. So maybe as we get, closer to the middle of the season or near August, maybe the Dodgers will look for the occasional opportunity to let him go an extra inning just so that they can kind of bump up that total and actually make sure that he surpasses 162 or gets to that 162 number. I think that's worth noting, at least keeping an eye on. Jeff Meller here at Rate Field as the White Sox host the Tigers right now in this 3-game series during the White Sox current 7-game homestand. White Sox won last night in what was a fantastic night at the ballpark. Thrilling win for the Sox, but somewhat clouded that Munetaka Murakami left the game with injury, so he will have to be on the injured list for a period of time. The White Sox are going to have to find a way to replace that bat, and again, Jacob Gonzalez is going to be, I think, the guy who's going to get at least the first crack to try and take advantage of some at-bats now for the White Sox that are there, and I'll be curious to see how the White Sox rookie responds with the opportunity now that is in front of him. 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me. When we come back, final segment here on White Sox Weekly, and I will get you that updated lineup for the Sox. And also, the White Sox had a had their Beyond the Diamond affair. The other lot of good stuff coming out of that. We'll share some of it if you missed it. On this is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Captain Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
A swing and a drive.
Come on.
Deep left. Ball game over. A two-run homer.
No way. Not again.
We're headed home.
Come on.
4-3 the final. Vargas now mopped by his teammates at home plate. What a finish.
What a finish. And we were headed home last night, but we're back here at the ballpark today. Right field, White Sox and Tigers, game number 2 of 3. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly for our final segments of this week's White Sox Weekly. Reminder, 2 hours prior to our pregame coverage, every Saturday we give you White Sox Weekly, where we just break down what happened in the week, the biggest stories of the day for the White Sox. Of course, today, that is the news that Munetaka Murakami has been placed on the 10-day injured list with a grade 2 hamstring. He's expected to be out 4 to 6 weeks, and the corresponding roster move for the White Sox was to call up Jacob Gonzalez, the birthday boy, who's 24 years old today. After homering 19 times in Charlotte, Gonzalez will have an opportunity to practice his craft at the major league level for the first time. Gonzalez, the 15th overall pick by the White Sox in the 2023 MLB draft. And after some struggles initially in professional baseball, Gonzalez has finally figured some things out at AAA this year after reworking his swing, working with White Sox director of hitting Ryan Fuller. And he has, at least it looks like, unlocked some things as the batted ball data certainly looks good. So the underlying metrics support the change in stats that Gonzalez has been able to put up so far this season. And so that is part of the reason why, if you've heard people say, hey, Gonzalez, he's got 16 of his 19 home runs at Charlotte, it's all based on the ballpark. Well, the underlying metrics still look good. So I think you can, you know, still be, you know, optimistic that Jacob Gonzalez has a chance here to maybe carve out a role for himself on the White Sox roster. And now he will be given plenty of opportunity to do so now in Munetaka Murakami's absence, as I would expect Miguel Vargas probably to get most of the starts at first base going forward. And we'll see, you know, between Gonzalez and maybe Colson Montgomery, I think you'll see both of those guys handle third base more now that with Vargas moving over to first base. And maybe Gonzalez can play first base as well. So I think there's a couple, you know, maybe I don't know if the White Sox even know what their ideal best defensive alignment would look like in the infield with Gonzalez. So they might need to have a little trial and error going forward. But he will have a chance to prove what he can do at the big league level to start today. All right, I wanted to bring this to you because the White Sox host a yearly event called Beyond the Diamond for charity, for White Sox charities, where they, obviously the stated goal by Chicago White Sox charities is the ongoing Chicago, just a better place to live, work, and play. And that is why they have Beyond the Diamond charity event, which features some Q&A with our very own Len Casper and of course there were some interesting things to come out of that, and so I wanted to bring a couple of them to you here on White Sox Weekly today, starting with Will Venable answering the question about some of the challenges managing this roster that Chris Getz has put together.
Yeah, that's always a challenge. I mean, that's a big part of the job, you know, and certainly working with the staff, and they work so hard to help you identify, you know, where these guys are at and how to best utilize them and how to best support them be their best version. And so, yeah, it's really an endless task that is really the job, you know, and that's something that we're excited about every day. And certainly the guys that Chris Getz keeps getting into this organization and we keep getting from AAA and the minor leagues, like, they're special guys and fun to work with.
Yeah, I've been covering the team a long time. And I'm like, I can't remember an off season where, like, it's only the end of May, but it seems like every move that he made in the off season, the front office made, these guys are all contributing for this team, even in the off season or even during the season. Randall Grichuk comes out of nowhere and boom. What a find he's been for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's been nailing it, you know, and really every department. I mean, it's kind of the things you don't see process-wise, the way this organization is developing is really cool to watch. And then the moves, you know, the guys that we're acquiring, the quality of characters, their skill sets, and their ability to go out there and perform and contribute to wins has been awesome, and it really all starts with Getzy.
More from Will Venable here on just how far this team has come this season.
Yeah, we're a lot further, you know. I mean, I think that there's things foundationally that we're doing that we talked about last year and things that we wanted to commit to that you're seeing guys commit to. You're seeing, you know, Getzy and the group doing a great job of continuing to add to our talent pool, and we just have a lot of good players. And, you know, the most important thing is just the way that these guys over this last year plus have connected, you know, and this thing that they built, you know, is really all about them and the way that they're going about their business and you know, support each other and care for each other and want the best for each other and want to go out there and play hard for each other. It's really cool to see.
That was, again, Will Venable at the White Sox Beyond the Diamond event on Thursday. Here is Mike Vassell, who I think if you're a Sox fan, you already know that Mike Vassell, it's what he provides as a player is clearly missed this season because he was able to give the White Sox 100 innings of, you know, relief work as a, you know, just the ultimate Swiss Army knife out of the bullpen occasionally as a starter for the Sox last year. He was excellent in his rookie season, and it was a big blow when we found out in spring training that Mike Vassell was going to have to undergo Tommy John surgery, not just because of that versatility they were losing out of the bullpen, but anybody who covers this team. And I know you see it on, you know, if you're watching games on CHSN, you'll see Mike Vassell a lot of times, you know, at some point during the game on the top step of the kind of rallying the team. And I think when we got word that he was going to miss the season, that was one of the, anybody who covers this team was thinking, ah, man, he brings so much, in personality and emotion inside the clubhouse that it wasn't just that you were losing 100 innings of great work out of the pen, but it was that you felt like you were losing a real team leader. And that is why the Will Venable and so many other members of the roster whistle to be a part of this team this year. And of course, you probably know by now the wand that has really changed the dynamic for the White Sox. Mike Vassell talking a little bit about that and Drew Romo's bat.
I think the last couple days, you've got the wand and a bat.
Yes.
So what was that about? The wand wasn't enough?
Well, no, it's always enough.
Okay.
But it's actually
of course.
Drew Romo's bat that I'm using. And Drew Romo is just an incredible human being. And he's a very strong man of faith, so I actually named the bat Moses' staff,
okay.
And that is what it is now, and he likes it, and now it's my bat, so that's what I'm going with.
We have religion together, and
well,
the Pope.
We do the Pope, so yeah. It kind of goes hand in hand. You know,
it makes sense. We're getting biblical. We're parting the AL Central.
Exactly.
I like the idea.
Exactly.
It is a magical ride so far this season. Obviously, you heard Connor McKnight and Chuck Garfine there with Mike Vassell, again, at the White Sox Beyond the Diamond charity event this past Thursday. That, folks, is going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly. Remember, you get a chance to learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp starting at $165. Kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a 4-day camp. Campers will receive a Sox swag bag with a White Sox branded compression arm sleeve, 2 tickets for a 2026 White Sox home game, and much more. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/camps. I'm Jeff Meller. I want to say thank you to Keith Law for hopping aboard. Thank you, as always, to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball. That is Brendan Raleigh. Jake Santos back at our Chicago Board of Trade ESPN Chicago studios. Great job. I'll talk to you in a few minutes as we get you set for White Sox and Tigers with our pregame show on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.